adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario!
Noi siamo i campioni nazionali RDD, siamo la capitale di Cagliari RDD, siamo la S Roma e qui vinciamo noi, non ce n'è per nessuno, la Roma siamo noi, e siamo noi i campioni, siamo noi la conferenza, la vinciamo solo noi, e siamo noi, sì la Roma siamo noi, e siamo noi i campioni. Siamo noi, Mourinho ha vinto, e nei palloncani tutti quanti sono morti, con quello del posto sta come la commessa, è arrivato questo che mi vince a fretta, e siamo i campioni, 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 la Lazio sofficcone.
Welcome to Rete This Way, a culture podcast that brings you the latest and greatest news in the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and with us as always, we have Paolo Noboloni Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
We've got a Mr. Chris Pacelli.
Hello, everybody.
We've got a Gigi Julian D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
How is everybody doing tonight? Specifically, how is Chris doing? Here, Chris, I have your setup here, too. Hold
That's
on.
Let the me one. Just...
Yeah, spet.
Don Carlo.
Don Carlo, and I have it right at the time, so let's play that.
Comincio io.
Comincio Carlo.
Voice of an angel, too. Bravo.
The only person not clapping is Paulo.
Yeah.
I'm not clapping either.
He's got on the table.
I can't clap for that. I'll give them credit. I believe they do deserve a lot of credit, but I can't clap for them still.
Chris?
Okay. Are we getting to the top of the conversation now? Because
why, Paulo?
Paulo wants to rant.
No, I don't know what. I'm just saying. I think I disagree with Julian. I think it was the fact that Inter lost the Scudetto more than Milan winning. So, I mean, I don't give Milan credit.
No, you have it all here. Why would you know?
Hold on. Even Magnan admitted in I think, I guess it's the postseason interview.
Magic Mike?
Yeah, Magic Mike admitted in an interview with Gazzetta dello Sport and said that with Inter losing against Bologna, it gave Milan hope. So, like I said, it's more of the fact of Inter losing the Scudetto than Milan winning it.
I disagree. Yes. I think you're also ignoring the fact that Milan went unbeaten in 16 games.
Yes, again, with...
And went through the last five-game gauntlet where everybody said, oh, they're going to drop points, and they won every single game.
Julian, but you're remembering anything Milan does is illegitimate, so none of that
Inter
counts.
Inter blew it for sure. Inter had a chance, don't get me wrong, but I think you're also...
Okay, but, Julian, you say
away
that.
A lot of what... Milan
but listen,
did.
You say that the only time that Inter lost was against was that game that Paul just mentioned against Bologna in the same time frame. They last lost before that in February. So I mean, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 lost. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. So 16 of 17. They were unbeaten. But that one, that one was the difference.
Yeah.
But what did Milan end up winning by points wise?
Two points. Okay. We're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's get into the table. Let's just like I'll read out the table.
Start from the top, Mike.
Yeah, I'll start from the top. So
la 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 la, I can't hear you. La 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 la.
So Milan finishing first with 86 points.
Okay, I'm done, Mike.
Inter in second with 84 points. Then that's tier one. Then we have Napoli in tier two by themselves, 79 points. Juve in fourth with 70 points. Then Lazio fifth, 64. Roma 6, 63. Fiorentina 7, 62. And Atalanta 8, 59. So Atalanta are out, I believe, of Europe, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I guess we'll continue. So Verona finished 9th with 53 points. Torino and Sassuolo 10 and 11, respectively, with 50 points. Udinese finished 12th with 47. Bologna 13th with 46. Empoli in 14th with 41. Sampdoria in 15 with 36, tied with Spezia in 16th with 36. And then Salernitana in 17th with 31 points are the last safe team. And then Cagliari with 30, Genoa with 28, and Venezia with 27 were relegated. And that's your table. Before we get into, I guess, the Milan talks, I think we should probably really discuss them at length. They deserve it. But I want to know, again, just out of what I just said, what were the biggest surprises outside of perhaps a Milan win?
I think we can probably drum up a few, I don't want to use the word excuses, but mm-hmm. we'll use the word excuses for Atalanta for why they finished where they did. But I think them finishing in eighth was unexpected and definitely a disappointment. I'm not trying to steer us towards the Gasperini out conversation. I still think he's done a great job there, but them finishing eighth after finishing in fourth or third 3 years in a row, mm-hmm. whatever the case was, I think that was unexpected, and would expect better from them next year.
Yeah, Paul.
I was gonna say Spets is surviving. I mean, also, that same breath, Salernitana.
Yeah, that's what mine was gonna be. Salernitana, I think. Just again, we were all talking about it, obviously, 2 months ago. Just like considering they were, I think they gained. What did they end up gaining in like the last whatever?
Well, I suppose they had like 9 points going into January.
I think that's right. That sounds accurate. And yeah, and then again, they end with 31. So again, an incredible turnaround. You could see it coming when Davide Nicola stepped up.
So I mean, okay. So put it this way: does the 40-point rule still hold? I don't really think it does.
The 40-point rule to secure your safety?
Yeah.
Just quickly, I don't know, like, how long it's, if it's ever been 40. Like, I feel like for a while it's been like 36, 37.
I think
I feel like 40 is kind of going over and above, but I feel like 36, 37, you're usually safe.
Agreed. And I think Paulo is like more being conservative, saying 40, you are safe, right? Like, whereas realistically, that threshold, you're right, Chris, is a lot lower. Hmm.
Well, historically, like we're talking, you know, 20 years ago, you needed 40 points. To stay in Syria, but you know, as Chris said, it's now becoming less and less as I guess the gulf from the bottom to the top has expanded. I don't know how else to explain it.
I would probably say more so because the gulf from the bottom to the top. So we're looking at 86 points compared to 27 with Venezia. I think there's a lot of points that are mixed up in like that middle of the table, right? Because like you have a logjam, basically from, we'll call it fifth until, I mean, fifth to eighth, possibly even ninth if Verona had got a few more points, but you're looking at 64 points to 53 points, right? Like that's where a lot of them were soaked up as well because those guys were all fighting for Europe.
Mm. You can also argue the fact as well that maybe 20 years ago, the bottom clubs were a lot better suited playing against bigger clubs. Now it's not the same. Like you every time except for Milan versus Spezia, but that's another topic of conversation. But like every time a big club plays against a recently promoted side, it's usually a lopsided result. And every time it's not, it's like a big event, big deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This year, though, I think there was enough upsets, right?
Yeah, I mean, Empoli beat Napoli twice.
Juve once.
No. Juve once. Yeah, yeah, that's right. They beat amply beat Juventus. I mean, Venezia took points off Juventus.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so yeah, there's a lot. It's just like, just overall, the bigger clubs again, just more money is now involved, and there's a lot more depth at the top than there is at the bottom.
Okay.
It'd be interesting to look at. I mean, like 31 must be one of the lowest ever to survive relegation in a 20 team league.
I'm gonna do some just quick searches and see what I can come up with. Meanwhile, Julian, again, do you concur that kind of what we named are basically surprises?
Trying to think of another one. I don't know if there's. Yeah, the Atalanta falling off is big, and I think the relegation race in general. I mean, I guess I'll say Cagliari going down. I feel like there's a good amount of talent on that squad where they should have put up a better fight. I know Nandez was hurt for a while. Del Pedro, I think, still put up like 14, 15 goals. I don't know. Marco Raga's there. Like, they seem to have a solid... If you look at their roster compared to some of the rosters that did survive, to me, they have a better roster on paper.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong, but there's a good interview that I suggest all of you should watch. Watch it. I mean, even if you don't understand Italian very well, you should watch it. It was hilarious because it was Cagliari owner Tommaso Giulini being interviewed by Fabio Caressa. And, Giulini right off the bat attacks Caressa, saying that the information that Caressa had about Giulini wanting to sell the club was fake news, etc. And Caressa immediately just like destroys him and saying that, well, like, why don't you take responsibility for your club being relegated and the fact that you changing managers three times probably contributed to the fact that your club got relegated. And it was just him, just Giulini, just like ignoring the fact that, you know, he made detrimental mistakes to that contributed to the fact that Cagliari went down. As Julian said, the squad itself wasn't necessarily poor, but it was very bad decision making that cost Cagliari the season. And like, I'm talking about organizational decision making.
Okay, just quickly, I want to get so last year Torino had 37 points, but 34 would have seen them safe. The year before, Genoa had 39 points, but 36 would have seen them safe. And let's just go one more year.
So 34 and 36 so far.
Yeah.
Would have kept you safe. So
I mean, despite having a little bit more as the 70th position, but and then the year before that, Genoa again, 38 points, and actually they tied with Empoli that season at 38. So they just, I guess, made it on differential.
So on average, 36 points between the three that you mentioned.
So
for the last, probably for the past 5 years, 31 has been the lowest, like.
Oh, easily.
Yeah, easily, yeah.
Yeah. Let's go, I'm going to just, it's 2008.
Well, I mean, Genoa going down is not much of a surprise. Considering that Genoa has been in the bottom five for the past, Michael mentioned at least two of the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't much of a big a surprise. And plus, we're talking about change of managers, but Genoa had, was it Ballardini, Shevchenko, and then Blezin, right? Am I missing anyone?
No, I think that's all of them.
Yeah, so, and again, two, you have two clubs that have changed their manager three times. So it's not necessarily as we always discuss about the five-game bump. There wasn't really any long-term planning. Well, now there is in terms of Genoa. We'll see. There's a good interview on the Italian Football Podcast with Genoa's owners, and they have a long-term plan. We'll see if it pans out, because other than maybe Joe Tacopina, the American owner from Spal, all the American owners have been absolutely incompetent in getting back from Serie B into Serie A.
Yeah, I don't think that's, not to defend them, but, and I agree with what you said there, but I don't think it was part of their initial plans when they bought the club to have to come up with a plan to go from Serie B to Serie A. I feel like they bought the club with the expectation they would stay there, and their plans probably had more so to do with how can we become stronger in Serie A, not coming from Serie B to Serie A. But
well, like there's an art to Italian culture here. Playing Moneyball at, you know, with a club that is not necessarily on the most stable footing in the sense that in terms of their squad, you can probably get away with that by having like a club that actually is at a mid-table quality. But like, you know, risk playing Moneyball when your club barely survived relegation the previous season, I don't think it was a wise strategy. They probably should have done that and gave themselves an off season to do so. Like, they came in and they did that Moneyball type of stuff in January. You know, again, it seemed that it was like doomed from the start. It was the same thing with Parma. Parma, the Kroos bought Parma and thought that they can run it like they do a North American team. It doesn't work like that. It needs more finesse and more art to Calcio than the North American sports.
One would argue it takes a little bit more. I guess. Like a farmer's touch, perhaps, to cultivate something. But I want to go on the same kind of vein here, and we'll discuss Moneyball-ish. But let's, I just want to play this again.
Oh, voice of an angel.
Now, would you characterize? Congratulations again, Chris. But grazie. Would we characterize this as maybe a Moneyball situation that perhaps was a functioning one? Was this in a structure that worked in this league?
I think it's particular to Milan, where you know they're obviously trying to compete for a Scudetto, but they don't have the resources like some of their rivals do. So they had to do something different because, you know, for a decade, it seemed like of bringing in, you know, old players on frees or young players that are, you know, not established yet and don't really have that much potential. It just wasn't working. So they had to do something different. And, you know, obviously after that summer with Mirabelli there, that didn't work. So, yeah, they had to do something different. I think the youth route worked, and I think that's one characteristic that maybe I underrated with Pioli was his ability to develop the younger players in the squad. So, again, it obviously worked out, but I don't think it would work for every club, but it did in this case. So I don't know if it's a model to copy, I guess, is what I was getting at.
Is it that's a good point. Is it a model that could be duplicated by themselves? Like, do you think this is a sustainable model for themselves going forward, or are they going to have to kind of shake it up and reinvent themselves to stay relevant next year?
I just don't think it's relevant for trying to go further in Europe. I think this model could allows you to be competitive in Serie A, i.e. top four. But if the goal is to go further in Europe, then I'm not saying abandon the youth model, but at some point you have to start, you know, paying, you know, 30 to 60 million for that 26-year-old that you know is already good and can start from day one.
Right. Yeah. And I guess theoretically, I mean, I'm not proposing that these are the exact numbers, but a model like this probably ends up working 1 in 10 times, and it happened to work this year for Milan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every other year, maybe Milan finishes between 2 and 3 with that same strategy. And just again, this year they happen to take it home.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking about models and sustainability,
We're not talking about Zaniolo and Zaccagni, Paul.
How
does it not?
Okay, where did that come from?
I don't know, models, I guess. I don't know. Continue.
Yeah. models. Okay. Okay, damn it, Michael. So let's say, so we're talking about sustainability, and I believe the Milan's Thierry Henry has a Liao, for those who don't get the joke, has a buyout clause, or a buyout clause. Yeah.
Release clause.
Release clause, thank you. As a release clause. So, you know, latest reports are saying that City might come in. Now, if City pays that release clause, isn't that an acknowledgement that Milan's model is working?
How so?
Yeah. Well, in the sense that they bought Liao for, I don't know, probably 10 times less that they're going to sell him for.
Yeah.
And so they can take that money and actually reinvest it into the squad and make it actually, in my opinion, become more Champions League oriented, in the sense that they can get depth players, they can expand the size of the squad. The reason why they didn't do well in Champions League is because they were playing the same 11 as they were in Serie A, and not actually allowing the fact to rotate in Serie A to play their games in Europe with their best starting 11 possible.
Right. I think the sustainability of the project, if that's what you're getting at in terms of being able to take the next step, like Chris alluded to earlier, maybe that is the right approach. Maybe that is a approach, rather, that is a correct approach to do that. But again, if your aim is to be successful, and let's say again the culmination of all of this is, you know, like Inter did in 2010, like a treble, let's say that would be the ultimate success, is building up your squad enough so that you can sell your players for premiums your goal, or is it for that treble? I don't know that, you know, it's a success, it's a sporting success to say, yeah, we built these players up, now sell them off. That just sounds like business to me.
Well, it depends who's still in charge, who still owns Milan. If it's Elliot, then I think what you said about building up players and selling them, that's a success for Elliot, because they took Maldini's model of finding young players, developing them into star players, and then selling them off for a profit, and using that profit to reinvest into the squad without dipping into the owner's equity. To me, that's a successful project, and eventually it's going to make them better in the long run.
I don't disagree.
Expanding the squad.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. I'm just saying, again, if your model is to make the profits, and then what do? After you sell Leao, for example, do you buy another young player and wait for him to develop, or are you replacing him with, you know, an equal talent that is going to cost still a fraction, but you can still compete at the same level? Like, what's the point, is what I'm getting at. Are you existing to turn out, like, to be a farm team for other teams to buy your players, or are you competing?
I just want to butt in here. I think, yeah, honestly, for Serie A, that's unfortunately the point we are at.
Right.
There's some players for sure who aren't going to go play for money, but I would say about 70%, if you offer them, hey, we're going to double your salary, you're going to be playing in the best league in the world, unfortunately, that's the Prem right now. I think you'd be very hard to find guys who will say no.
Well, right. Just look at Frank Kessié.
Well, yeah, he's going to Spain, I guess, right?
He's going to Spain for a bigger salary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But look at Donnarumma.
Yeah. So, and still one best goalkeeper in league. Somehow.
Uber Eats League.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the, I guess we had Paulo, Chris, and you also kind of talk about sustainability. Julian, do you think this is a sustainable model for Milan to, you know, continue? Do you think they need to, again, reinvent themselves going into next season?
I wouldn't say reinvent themselves. I think this is, they're similar to Inter at this point. Like, you need to build a strong squad that can compete on all fronts. But unfortunately, that normally comes with selling a notable player because you need to use that money to invest in, like, up-and-coming players who will make your overall squad better.
Right.
But
there's no true answer to it. It's kind of a...
I would argue that we've seen this model before in the past couple of years with Atlanta. It's just that now Atlanta has fallen off, right? So they didn't achieve the success that these, you know, teams who have success in their DNA perhaps were able to achieve, but maybe Atlanta did it with more success, literal on the financial side of things, right? Because they probably turned a much bigger profit on all these players that they sold even to these clubs.
I think the more comparable model it would be Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund. And the only reason I say that is because Dortmund, you know, they know that eventually their players are going to get bought, likely by Bayern. So, you know, they go out and they buy that 18, 19, 20-year-old with a lot of potential, and they give him, you know, a lot of playing time with the hopes that, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, he fulfills his potential and they're able to, you know, maximize their profit. So just to go back to Paulo's comment from earlier, I think if Elliot were to be, you know, the ownership group for the long run, I could see that becoming the route that Milan takes, like it's similar to Dortmund. But just from what I'm reading, again, it's all hearsay, obviously, but it sounds like Redbird are prepared to invest more in the club. So I don't think that Dortmund model is what we'd be looking at. But I think what they accomplished, you know, the past 3 years going into this year is more of a Dortmund thing than an Atalanta thing. Very similar, but I think...
I think that's a good point, though, because I think you, like, that distinction allows for, I guess, literal, like... beyond financial success, it literally also breeds, you know, league success, because you know, Dortmund has been, you know, has been able to push and be a leading team in the Bundesliga as well. So
yeah, they've done damage in Europe as well, not consistently, but it comes
right.
I know it's a little bit too early to get into the rumores section, but the names that are being mentioned, you know, linking Club Brugge players to Milan, I think is Noah Lang and you have to help me with the pronunciation with the other one.
Dirk Ketteler, I think, something along those lines.
And I mean, like, to me, bringing in those two players, after, let's say hypothetically, after settling Liao, to me, would actually give, you know, Milan a deeper squad and a better chance to, you know, battle and do well on three fronts instead of just, you know, focusing on Serie A.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Like, it comes down to, like, that whole quality versus quantity debate. Obviously, Leao's special talent, so I don't know if, like, if he's an 8 out of 10, if replacing him with, you know, two players that are 6.5 out of 10. Or 7 out of 10, I don't know which one you're better off with if you're talking about going further. Obviously, it helps the depth argument, but yeah, I think it just depends on the player.
I don't know. That's just me. Also, if we're moving on, Michael, I don't know where you want to take the conversation to, but I also forgot to mention the fact that Empoli, you know, after doing so well in the first half, and then yet still, like, coast through the second half and finished with how many points?
41.
So that magical 40 point rule to survive. And they gained 3 more points than their previous season when they were in Serie A. And they did most of that from the first half of the season. So it's to me, that's a pretty impressive pretty impressive season in my opinion.
Right, just a like a surprise as well, or are you just saying you just wanted a special note of the season?
Honestly, it's a surprise the fact that they did so well in the first half. We mentioned it in January, but and it's also a surprise that they did so poorly and just kind of rode the wave of the first half and just coast for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Okay. I just the last point that I wanted to make. I mean, I wanted to get into a discussion about Inter and their failure, but I feel like we probably will cover it at some point in the future as well. And it's always ripe for picking. So let's leave it for now. But I guess I just want to revisit just quickly. I know we don't have what we said, but just revisiting our predictions earlier in the season and then compared to maybe a very, very, very early prediction for next season before the transfers, et cetera, all happened. But what do we think, again, compared to what we said, who was the most right? Probably Chris.
I mean, I know you guys, I have to put on record, you guys all picked Milan to finish seventh.
Yeah,
I think yes. That's right, actually.
I wanted to hear that silence. It makes me feel good. I don't know. Yeah, I know I had – I also had Atlanta winning, so they finished eighth. So,
yeah, you know, so maybe tie game. Points yeah.
Yeah, so it might be a four-way draw here.
Four-way draw Paulo, for last?
Paulo, you had Roma second and Milan seventh, so there's – negative 39.
Yeah, but I did have Napoli making Champions League, I think, and none of you had that. So,
Maybe. I don't know. I might have had them in fourth.
I may still have mine here.
Of the top four, I feel like I maybe had. Yeah, I think I had Inter at two, but. I doubt I have mine as well.
Yeah, I have mine here.
I definitely did not have Milan one. I can guarantee that.
I have Atalanta 1, Inter 2, Juve 3, Roma 4, Napoli 5, Lazio 6, Milan 7.
Yeah, actually, I have mine as well. So I had Juventus, Roma, top. No, Juventus, Roma, Atalanta, Napoli, Inter, Lazio, Milan.
I don't have mine, but I think, Paul, do you actually have ours as well, or you only screen grabbed yours?
No, I still have mine in my notes. So it was just mine.
Someone check in our thread. Maybe we sent those photos like last year.
Yeah.
Like, Julian, considering... you check. Julian, you search. I think, again, I want to just, I'm not going to pretend like I had everything right. I think I may have had Inter 2 because I probably put Juve first.
That sounds about right.
And I think I had Atalanta 3 and Napoli 4 or those flipped, but I'm not sure. Or maybe I put Roma in as well. Now that I think about it, with Mourinho fourth or something. I don't know.
Mourinho effect.
Okay, anyways.
Considering that we're pretty all piss poor.
Yeah, we'll call it a wash.
It wasn't a good year.
I do want to get a very early prediction from us just to compare where we are before transfers, et cetera, happen, just to maybe couple months down the line and on what we actually realistically think after all that business is taken care of, who do we have as like a 1-2-3 scenario, I guess. Start with Paulo.
Okay, not in any particular order, but I guess
the top three, that's fair.
Yeah, the best three teams right now are Juventus, Milan, Inter.
Okay.
The reason why I put Juventus in there, because just as of the end of the season, a bunch of trash is leaving, so that immediately makes them better.
That's, better by subtraction?
Yes.
Okay.
Because those players aren't playing anymore.
Yeah. Julian?
Sorry, I found your photo.
Oh, yes. All right. Okay, say that first.
So yours was
Juve 1.
Oh no, it just went away. You had Juve, Atalanta.
Oh shit.
damn, my phone locked. I just lost it. Yeah, Inter in fourth.
Yeah. Oh, in fourth. Who'd I have in third?
Hold on, I'm trying to find it again.
Probably Napoli.
Yeah, I think it was Napoli or Roma.
Which is where they finished.
Oh, I'm back. I'm back.
Okay.
Juve, Atalanta, Roma, Inter, Napoli, Lazio, Milan.
Okay, one more time. Juve,
Atalanta.
Yeah.
Roma, third. Inter, fourth.
Okay.
Napoli, Lazio, Milan.
Okay. Shit.
So, again, was that the only one that had Napoli finished in top four?
Possibly. So, yes. Possibly.
Yeah, I'll have them fifth.
Okay, well, that's a point for Paulo right there.
Listen, we already all agreed no points for any of us.
we all
did poorly.
Bragging rights, all right?
We should all get a negative point for having Milan in seventh.
Yes.
Yeah, Chris, but Chris had Atalanta
winning. So did I, in his defense.
And they finished them too. Out of the top seven.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, it's a failure overall, for sure.
Actually, no one had Fiorentina in their top seven either, so.
Yeah. The Italiano effect.
Yeah,
that's it. Okay, so Paulo had again in no order, but the Milans and Juve.
Yeah,
Julian.
Sorry, what was the question on who do we think is going
to
be
for next season? Yeah, like who do we think like the top three will be? You don't have to give it order. Just who do you think the top three will be next season?
Yeah, I agree. I think the three of them are going to strive to get better. I look at Napoli, they're losing their captain. There's rumors about Koulibaly moving to the Prem. Atalanta, I don't think they're going to bounce back so quick. Roma and Lazio might be sneaky in there because I think they will get slightly better as well, but I don't think they'll be able to compete with the top three.
Okay, Chris?
Yeah, I would agree with Paulo and Julian. It's better than, you know, the French league or the German league where there's really just one team every year. So I like that there are three teams that can't compete, but at the same time, I do hope that, you know, a Napoli or a Roma or Lazio can kind of creep into that conversation, whether it's next year or the next few years, just to make it more exciting.
Right. Yeah, I will also concur. And I think, again, the only reason I have Napoli, again, I mean, similar reasons that Julian stated, but they're also going to be risking a lot more play next year, perhaps. Right, Paulo?
Oh, the poor guys, they go from like seeing it and seeing it to signing
to Bernadeschi.
To Bernadeschi.
That's glorious. I love that. I love that for them. Okay, let's move on from this talk. We'll move into another triumph, which we started off the show with, I guess, technically with our song choice, but Roma in the Conference League come out 1-0 victors over Feyenoord. So they are the conference, the inaugural Conference League champions.
Enough.
How many we got? Is that three, four? I think I heard Yay. Three claps. There's Julian's claps. There.
Already clapped.
Yeah.
But Michael, actually, Zaniolo scored. Speaking about Zaniolo.
Yeah.
a doink. I don't know if you saw that goal there.
Yeah, it was nice. It's very nice. Yeah. I mean, it was Roma. We've already talked at length over the last couple weeks about it, but, you know, whether this would be a successful season if they didn't pull this off. Well, they did pull it off. So, again, can we all agree that it is a triumph?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Even though they finished sixth. I guess still, I sixth by a point, they could have been fifth, but regardless, they secure Europe for next year, secure Europa League, right? As winners of Conference League, either way, mm-hmm. they would have gotten Europa League.
Yeah, and plus, you know, by winning, I'm pretty sure by winning that trophy, I'm pretty sure they collect an extra, I think it was like 15 to 18 million euros on top. Of what they made in, like from Serie A league positioning, so like they just on the economic level, it was a successful season.
Yeah,
and then on the sporting level, they won their first trophy in 14 years now.
Who was 2008, the last one?
Copa.
Yeah.
Copacabana.
Copa Italia 2008, I believe it was. So again, economic level success, sporting level success. In terms of the fact that they won a trophy, just Serie A, that's something that they had a bad start. They, you know, Mourinho didn't have his starting 11 set, didn't have a formation set, and the only time that they actually started to get things going is when Mourinho changed to a three-man D.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of work to be done, and just that's typical of a Mourinho side, and Mourinho's on record in saying that he needs 2 or 3 years to actually build a championship winning side in terms of the league. So we'll see where this goes. Again, it's a first building block, and I think they're going in the right way.
Yeah, and that's a great segue, because that was going to be my next question. And I guess I'll ask it to Chris. Is Paulo right? Is Mourinho right? And is Mourinho going to be there to continue this sporting project?
Mourinho effect.
About it being a 3 to 4 year thing?
Well, in general, like, are they, did they, by winning this again, did they prove that they are in it for, they have a plan and it's a winning plan? And will Mourinho be there to show them the way to being competitive in the league as well, etc.?
I mean, he obviously has the pedigree. I think this summer will tell us a lot with regards to how much does Friedkin and Roma spend and who do they bring in. We know the whole Monchi disaster. I think I said this at the end of the season last year. It just felt like for years Roma didn't have a plan in the transfer window. They were bringing players in, which is fantastic, but there didn't seem to be any, rhyme or rhythm for why they were bringing certain players in. So I hope that, they can bring in players that fit whatever Mourinho wants to do going forward. So yeah, this summer will tell us a lot. And just to answer your question, I think if they are going to be successful, whether it's winning a Scudetto or winning a Europa League, I do think Mourinho will be there. I don't know, if Roma go another 3 to 5 years finishing in 5th, 6th, 7th, I don't know how many other high profile managers they'll be able to lure in.
Fair. Okay. Julian, what are your thoughts? Do you think, again, similar question, what are your thoughts on the Mourinho, seeing as how your team specifically has an intimate relationship with Mourinho and a very complicated one, because again, he obviously won and immediately bailed. Is this a scenario where, genuinely he looks like he is going to be there to build, or is he kind of, going to be collecting a paycheck for the next maybe 2 seasons and then he's going to want to go elsewhere?
I wouldn't call it collecting a paycheck, but yeah, I don't see him there super long term. I could see him moving on in another year or two, especially if Roma kind of stagnate.
Mm-hmm. If they don't? If they don't? If he is able? If he is successful in his attempts to build, and he brings in the right players, he brings in his Mourinho quality players, and they compete.
Depends what he wins. If he were to win a Scudetto with Roma, he'd retire on top and go to another team, I think.
Right.
He'd
pull a Bianco and walk off the field.
Yeah. But I think if they stagnate, and again, not saying that Roma can compete, but I also think the other teams are getting better around them, so it's still going to be difficult. It's not anything that's just, Mourinho is going to make them win. Like, it's mm-hmm. it'll be tough for sure. But I think, yeah, I think my gut's telling me he'll be there 2 more years.
Okay.
So what I find hilarious, so I think it was today, so Monday, Mourinho posted a message on Instagram, essentially the, post-mortem vacation, saying, okay, mm-hmm. we'll see you back in September, etc., or later in the summer. And, he said that, I won't always be at Roma. I think that was the quote. And of course, certain publications in Italy were making hay with that and saying, Roma fans are now worried that he might leave, etc., etc. But like, again, as I just said, he has a history of only staying maximum 3-4 years with each club. He's a type of person and manager that enjoys getting taken on new experiences, building, and then leaving that club when he's achieved whatever he can achieve with that club. So by him saying that, oh, I won't be at Roma forever, is that he's just being honest. So that's why I find it disingenuous and annoying when I see that type of crap from Italian publications. I mean, it's not far from their normal, but it's just annoying that they use it for clickbait
and sensationalize it. Yeah,
and sensationalize, exactly. So of course he's gonna leave if like as Julian said, if Roma win the Scudetto, he's gone. That could be the most. I mean, the only other coaches that can say have done that is Nils Lindholm, ex Milan manager, as Chris would know if his Milan history, Fabio Capello, and then maybe him,
and Antonio Conte,
twice. Where does that have to come into?
He won and left. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm talking about Roma history.
Oh, Roma. Okay, sorry. I thought you meant in general. Because he also won and left. Conte won and left twice.
Yes. Yeah, but no, I'm talking about Roma history. Okay, the guy. Fair. I mean, like he said that you know, winning that Conference League trophy is a point of unity. So like I said, it's a point to build upon, and you know, move into the future and keep. You know, getting in pieces. They need a defender. They need a midfielder, and I think Danilo's staying. But so like they need and a wing back to replace Maitland Niles, who is going back.
Ritorna Maitland Niles. Okay, I want to ask a similar question that we asked about Milan and their victory. So. Is this a sustainable project again at this point? I asked if this was, again, if they're on the right track, but is it something that is repeatable even for them to repeat some of the success next season?
So I'll comment on the economic aspect. So what the Friedkins are doing is very interesting. They're actually buying back the shares, the public shares, because Roma was a publicly traded company in Italy. So what they're doing is they're buying back the shares and making it into a private company again. So by doing that, they don't have to follow all the rules that a public company would. And I think they would actually increase the amount of capital that they can put in without any further strings attached. So is it sustainable? I think so. By taking it off the publicly traded stock market, they can actually improve the club without any added rules to follow.
Need to worry about regulations, etc.
Exactly.
Well, certain ones, because I mean, they still always have to go by FIFA regulations.
Yes. Yeah. Fair play. But in terms of sporting, I think it's sustainable. I think you know, Mourinho developed a good team, you know, team spirit. Over the course of the season,
and that's something. But I just want to compare it, and I guess maybe I want to get Chris's thoughts to Milan, who I think we can see tangibly what the Milan model is. What is the Roma model? Roma just seemed to
in Mourinho be, we trust,
yeah, on a wing and a prayer.
That's the model.
Yeah, Mourinho effect, right?
Yeah, like, Mourinho effect.
So
gone.
Yeah. Exactly. So is the Mourinho effect sustainable? I guess it is while he's there, perhaps.
Yes.
But even that, like we've seen teams in the past with Mourinho where he's not overstayed his welcome, but maybe the team has kind of underperformed after overperforming, perhaps. Is it the cards for Roma, and are Roma maybe better off on finding a model, a sustainable model like a Milan?
Oof, I mean, go back to what I said earlier with regards to, you know, what they do this summer, I think will tell us a lot about, you know, how much do they believe in the squad they have, and or, you know, how much are they prepared to, you know, invest financially. It gets them further in Serie A and further in, you know, Europa League or Champions League going forward. Because, yeah, again, Mourinho with Roma, as Paulo said, you know, a few times the last few months, you know, they weren't playing, you know, the sexiest stuff, but it got them results. But then to Julian's point, you know, when he's gone in 2 to 3 years, you know, what do you do with those players then? Mm-hmm. I guess one thing Roma does have going for them is generally their Primavera side turns out some pretty decent players. Now, they don't all end up staying with Roma, and I think maybe that's something they have to look at. You know, Milan could do the exact same thing, but we're talking about Roma here. So, you know, maybe relying on those, or not relying, trusting those strong youth players that they develop more is part of what they need to do going forward. Easier said than done, because you know, when your job's on the line, you want to play the guy that's going to win you a game. But, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, they are doing that. Just, you know, look at, you know, the Cesare Bove started. Zaleski came in and essentially made that that left back position his own as Spinazzola was recovering from injury. So there, and then you got Afenajan, yeah, that came in as well. And then you also have, you know, their captain, you know, is also a Roma Academy product. And, yep. And, you know, to his credit, was the first Roma captain to ever win a European trophy. So give credit where credit's due, even though, you know, we all, even Roma fans aren't the most appreciative. But I guess, you know, history is written by the winners, and his image will be turned around by the fact that he won. Chris, you mentioned they don't necessarily play the sexiest stuff, and I think the performance in the final against Feyenoord kind of describes that, you know, epitomizes that statement. You know, just sitting back 1-0 up with 20, I think honestly it was 30 minutes left to play, and Mourinho just shut up shop and parked the bus, and it worked. I mean, to have the balls to do that and pull it off, you look like a genius. But as Allegri has proven by trying that in a cup final against a better, well, I wouldn't say a better team, but, well, in terms of Inter, a better team, that can blow back in your face and make you look like an idiot. So credit to Mourinho. He realized that Roma were the better team, per se, and it gave him a trophy. So it's just... Again, I'll just end it up, close it up by saying that it's the Mourinho effect. He knew what he was doing,
yeah,
and was able to, you know, do something that no other manager could pull off successfully.
Yeah, I want to get the true neutral, because we all know Paulo is a Roma sympathizer. I want to get the true neutral here. So Julian, again, just comparatively, I think we can all agree though that like the Milan model is trustworthy. I think in the sense that it's clearly worked and it seems sustainable. Do you feel the same way about Roma?
To an extent, but unfortunately, I mean, you can call it unfortunately if you want. I think a lot of Serie A is going to have to go kind of with the Milan model if they want to survive.
Right.
Like, I think there's going to be a lot of the teams, even the bigger teams, where they're going to have to look at selling their better players so they can make more money to reinvest in the squad. Until the TV rights are on par with the Prem, and honestly, the way that's going, that's going to be years away. It is what it is.
So instead of a, as you all would have liked to have claimed, a renaissance of Italian football now that Juventus weren't dominating, it's actually going the other way. So because Juve are not dominating, now we're all screwed, is what you're telling me.
Super League. Well, yeah,
that's how it usually goes. That's literally how it usually goes.
Yeah.
In history. I mean, you know, when Juventus weren't there, I'll say that, you know, 15 years ago, Serie A wasn't competitive per se. Yeah. There has to be a hegemon in Serie A, and that strength comes from that hegemon being all powerful.
I prefer an Agumon.
Is that a Pokemon reference?
Or a Greymon. No, it's a Digimon reference.
But, you know, it's just it's historically, Serie A has struggled when there's a period of instability at the top of the league.
Yeah. Okay. Have we exhausted these topics? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Then why don't we agree to take a break quickly? And then when we get back, we've got just some fun for us to walk through who we think are the top players of the season. We have certain, you know, I guess stipulations you kind of had to stick to, but we'll get to that in the second half. But for now, we'll take a quick break and we will be right back.
Sotto i raggi del sole, com'è bello sognare, abbracciato con te.
Finalissima. Nailed it. Nailed it. Welcome back to the show. Okay, what we're going to do quickly first is we're going to do because I'm moderating the discussion. That's how I got out of doing it. We have the 11, your 11 of the season.
Yep. With best 11. There
best
you go.
11, but with only one player allowed per team. Exactly.
Correct.
Which is hard.
Yeah,
extremely hard.
And
harder than those who
Paul,
like,
I'm not sure if you
yeah.
I don't know if you also partook in this, but again, we also said that managers counted as well. So if you wanted a certain manager.
Yes, I did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who wants to go first? Who wants to volunteer their list?
I'll go first since you guys are gonna probably shit on mine. Okay, so goalkeeper Vicario. Left back Hickey, Bremer, Koulibaly. I want to sneak in Perisic, so I put him right back.
Huh?
What?
So I'm on the right side.
Go ahead.
Either Hickey can play right back. How about that? Whatever. He's a wing back. Simone Bastoni from Spezia. Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, Brekalo, Milan's T. Henry, Tammy Abraham, and Berardi, and then manager Nicola.
Wait, did you say Brekalo and Bremer?
Damn it!
Oh, Dio.
It's okay, just change one of those for Rabiot.
It's harder than
it is. It is very difficult. Say, okay, Paulo, while you work through that, who wants to go next? And we'll shit on Paulo in a little bit.
I can go.
Go ahead.
Okay, Giuliano.
Okay. So, yeah, this took me like 3 tries. I have a bunch of scribbles and. Yeah. So, from Salernitana, I have Davide Nicola as my manager.
Okay.
So I'm also doing a 4-2-3-1. So right back, I have
Perisic, Nahuel of course. Molina.
I have Nahuel Molina from Udinese. Center backs, I took Koulibaly and Bremer. Left back, this was my most difficult one. Left back, I chose Biragi because it is extremely difficult to find a true left back that's not Teo Hernandez.
Mm-hmm.
My two midfielders, I have Brozovic and Milinkovic-Savic. Right wing, I have Berardi. Left wing, I have Leao. In between the two of them, I have Lorenzo Pellegrini, and I have Vlahovic striking.
Sorry, Julian, my it cut out for me right after you said Milinkovic-Savic. Can you just repeat it?
Yeah, Berardi right wing, Leao left wing, Lorenzo Pellegrini in the middle of them, and then Vlahovic striking.
Okay. Nice.
Interesting.
Okay, Chris. I fixed mine. I put Torreira as in midfield.
Lucas Torreira.
Okay, so I have Tudor as my manager, Verona manager. Thought he did a good job replacing Ivan Juric. I have Guglielmo Vicario in goal. From left to right in the back four, I also have Biraghi. Center backs Bremer and Koulibaly. Right back also Molina. So I think Julian and I have identical back fours.
Yeah, we do.
And sorry, I'm playing a 4-3-3, so it's one holding midfielder. So the holding midfielder is Brozovic. And then in front of Brozovic, I have SMS and Pasalic. I think Pasalic was... I think he scored 8 or 9 goals, which for a midfielder is very, very, very good. And then my front three, so Thierry, a.k.a. Leao, at left wing, Berardi at right wing, and Tammy Abraham up front.
Oh, you went Tammy. Wow, we almost have an identical team.
Yeah, so... So like I said, I needed another midfielder. I actually had Lucas Torreira in mind before Brekalo, but I just wanted to give Brekalo a shout out because I thought he was Torino's best player, but well, outside of Bremer. But yeah, honestly, Chris and I have the same front three, shockingly.
And Chris and Julie have the same back four, and you all have
Bremer and Koulibaly,
Leao,
and Vicario.
And Vicario.
Guglielmo.
I mean, Leao is the Serie A MVP, so it's kind of hard to not.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to ignore that, even though you know.
Yeah.
But we did ignore the left back situation because no one.
Yeah. Well, again, you had to choose, and you could only choose one. You fool.
You friggin' buckler.
You friggin' donkey.
I would have put Teo, but there's literally. Yeah.
Mike and Paul.
Alexandro.
Why not Alexandro?
I did have Luca Pellegrini in one of my first drafts.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, or maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but Mike and Paulo, you guys didn't make a particular comment on my list about not having any players from Juventus.
No, I mean, Paulo also didn't, right? Paulo, who did
no.
you have? Yeah,
Paulo also. Okay.
He refused to, and then Julian's the only one who had a UA player.
I put Vlahovic, Yeah.
Which I think is a good shout. I mean, Immobile obviously was the capo within the year, but Vlahovic, you can't deny, he also had a great year for Fiorentina, and then okay one for Juve. He was actually
second in scoring,
and he was still good. It's just that again, he didn't have the same service that he had at Fiorentina.
And Allegri ball also doesn't
not
a good tactic for attackers.
Now, Chris, why didn't you have Juventus? Out of pure spite, or?
No, like, I mean, realistically, can we agree, like, Vlahovic is the only one good enough to make it? Like who else could you?
Quadrado, maybe.
Quadrado,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, like probably in the top five conversation if you're trying to pick a right back or a right winger. But
statistically, according to Opta, he was like one of the he was in the top 11
for right backs.
No, top 11 of the season.
Top 11 of the season.
Oh, okay, interesting. Okay, so I guess sure him, but I guess for the eyeball test, for me, and then I just preferred Abraham to Vlahovic. So
right.
And then I guess technically, to go one step further, I could have picked Allegri for my manager, but
or Sir Chesney for your
Guglielmo. With a name like Guglielmo, you have to.
Yeah, you can't. That's it.
No one gave a shout out to Ike. Yeah, I thought he was like best young player.
No, that's a good call. He did have a very good season.
Who's that? Sorry,
Hickey.
Oh, yeah, he had a good season. I don't think he was good enough to make any of our best 11s, but
yeah, see the eye of the mid table,
the mid table expert,
expert, yeah. I know. So,
Who are your managers again? Nicola,
Paulo, had Nicola.
Tudor.
Yeah.
Oh, and okay,
I had Tudor.
Nicole. So, is Nicola? Should he not be? No, I guess it's fine. How many games did we should have done like minimum half a season?
Well, he was there February, I think it was. I think he had 15 or 16 games.
Okay, I'll allow it. I mean, it's realistically, it's the season, it's the story of the season outside of like, the top everything else. So that's fair.
Yeah, but no, Chris was right in giving Tudor a mention. Like, I think everyone forgot that he actually didn't start the season with Verona. So, yeah. I think it was, wasn't DeFrancesco?
That's a good segue if we want to get into my worst 11.
Yes. Yeah. So, actually, why don't we? That is a great segue. So,
okay.
Julian, are you the only one who did a worst 11?
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah.
So,
I called it the disappointing 11.
They're all Juventus players. Now,
Rabiot is. The same rules. I did the same rules we did. Again, one player per team.
Do you know how hard that is to do? Anyway, good on Julian for doing it.
Was it more, Julian, was it more difficult to do this one or the best 11?
No, I think the disappointing 11 was more difficult.
Okay.
But I think, I don't know, I like what I have here.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep in mind, this was before the Conference League final, so that you guys may not agree with that one. So my coach was DeFrancesco. He had three games with Verona and got sacked.
Yeah. Okay, could you also argue Shevchenko?
Yeah.
You could argue.
I think you could argue. I don't know if I'd put him ahead of DeFrancesco.
Okay.
It's not like Shevchenko went into a brilliant situation either.
Yeah,
I mean, Verona was much better. They finished the season top half the table. They lost three straight games with DeFrancesco, and then he was sacked. So I think that speaks for itself. Right back, I had Kevin Malqui,
who I'll
pick.
Lost his – even though Di Lorenzo got hurt, Spalletti opted for a youth player as opposed to Malqui. Oh, that's funny. Center backs, I put Maksimovic, who was apparently on Genoa. This I didn't know. I don't know if I've seen the player fall off this much. I think he played a little bit in the first half of the season, and then once Blessing took over, I think he was basically stapled to the bench.
Yeah, didn't hear his name.
Wait, hold on. What, wasn't Godin on Calgary to start the season?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't think he started. I think he was gone before.
Let's look that up.
You look it up.
No,
you said it. You look it up. No, you said it. You look it up.
I realized I forgot my keeper, but I have it written down. I just got to say it. I'll finish my back four, then I'll do the keeper. Other center back, I have Acerbi. I think that Milan goal speaks for itself. But overall, I think you could do a toss up between Patrick or Acerbi.
Yeah.
For Lazio. Sure. They were both 100%. Not great this year. Left back, of course, Alexandro.
No argument there.
Fairly self-explanatory. Yeah,
no, wasted that one. You wasted that one.
Yeah.
Actually, no. Now that I think about it more, that's spot on. Because I was going to say you could say Rabiot, because Rabiot, but he didn't have. There were games where Rabiot is useful, whereas literally Alexandro, you cannot. There was no argument ever that he was a positively impactful player, because he was definitely an impactful player, especially in the Supercopa.
Negatively impactful for you. Exactly. But yes. Goalkeeper, just to go back, I put Juan Musso. I think he was obviously touted to have a huge year and kind of help carry Atalanta. I think he kind of regressed a little bit. My two midfielders, I put Amrabat from Fiorentina, who again was supposed to be a main signing from Verona when they got him 2 years ago, and I don't even think he was starting down the stretch. I, again, kind of just fell off this year. Beside him, I put Sensi, who, I mean, obviously had his injury issues at Inter, loaned him out to Sampdoria, where he continued to have injury issues. Right wing, so this is where... It was before the Conference League final. I put Zaniolo because I think he only had, I think it was like 5 goals and 3 assists in 30-something games on the year, which for a player of his caliber, for what he's supposed to mean to that team, I don't think that's good at all, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah. In the middle, I put Correa, Joaquin Correa, because he had 6 goals on the year coming in three games where he scored two braces. I know, it's actually a crazy stat. Like, it's, I don't even know if it's possible, but apparently it is. Left wing, this one was kind of a stretch because he played mainly as a striker, but I put Keita Balde. Again, I thought Calgary on paper were a solid team, and I thought he would kind of be a good help for them, and clearly he was not. And then my striker, I have Mbaye and Zola, and I think his earring issue against Inter.
Oh, my God. So I looked it up. So Godin was at Calgary until January.
Oh, he was. Okay.
And then yeah. Where?
Well, then, now he's at Atletico Mineiro. He left on a free transfer. Because remember, he had a bust up at Calgary, I think it was. Can't remember what happened.
Wasn't his wife from Calgary or something? No?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why he went back. That's why he went there. But I thought, for some reason, I thought he'd left before that. Maybe there was just rumors that he was leaving, and then eventually they just sold him or whatever. Or and he had that dust up.
So I would add Godin there because, you know, that was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, that's fair. Then I would need a new left winger, though.
So again, maybe Nani?
Yeah, that's a good one. I had Nani.
I mean, I don't think he came in with huge expectations, but I don't know how much he really helped Venezia down the stretch. So,
Yeah, I think he had an assist in his first game, and that was about it.
Yeah. But no, that's a good list. It's difficult to do.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anyone who, like, again, stand out. I think you got like the major gaffes of the season, right? Like Acerbi in there, I think is a really good one. What about the refs? Spezia refs. Spezia Milan.
him Pirato fucking up the Acerbi one.
Offside goal.
Again, Spezia Lazio.
Which gave Lazio fifth place.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, that's a massive fuck up right there.
What else? What were like major gaffes? Again, well, like, I'm trying to think through.
One of the 12 red cards that Milan could have got.
Oh, yeah. One of the 38.
So... literally, like. Like Mignan punched someone in the fucking head.
Yeah.
No right.
No, he karate chopped him.
Legit punched them.
You should go to jail. How's he not arrested?
Wait, who are you, Montreal Canadiens fans?
Well, that's what I was Hey-o. Getting at.
Hey-o.
Montreal merda. For everyone who's listening. We just lost a lot of followers. Let's quickly move on. okay. Anything else? I'm trying to think of, like, Julian, I can't disagree with those. I think those were really good choices. Yeah, I mean, I would say Dzeko, but he had a decent season. He scored.
He's still, yeah, he had
double
13
digits.
Goals.
Yeah, like, you can't ask for more outside of, how old is he, too? He's like 38.
36, I think.
What about Morishi?
Yeah. Is he still?
He
was he there?
Okay with Mallorca, I think.
He got loaned out, right?
Yeah, he was at Mallorca, and I think he actually like was okay. He scored a few goals, according to Dario Mancini's Twitter.
Okay, so the work. Okay, I know Julian put Alexandro, and it's pretty hard not to argue with it. But who else could we argue that should be in that top 11 there?
For you,
top 11,
best of the worst. Allegri as the manager in place of who did you have, Julian?
Francesco.
Yeah.
But then who do you put a left back?
Vigna, because he like it was the same situation with with Malky and Zanoli. Like Zaleski pushed out Vigna for the starting the job. He was a youth player to start the season. So, that's one. I mean, if we're talking in terms of Serie A, then sure, Zaniolo was a disappointment in Serie A. But I guess, you know,
Was Ribéry disappointing, or did we just expect that from a 38-year-old?
Yeah, he was like hurt a lot, right?
Yeah.
I tried not to let injuries play into it too much, but I think with Sensi, it's just the story of his Serie A career since he moved from Sassuolo, so it's kind of hard not to touch on.
Just trying. I mean, like, I don't know. I can argue Rabiot maybe, but like, I honestly, for me,
I think that's more your bias, to be honest. Yeah, I think Rabiot is serviceable in a lot of games.
Yeah,
and that's it exactly. Like, but he's no game breaker, and I think that's Paulo's issue is that you need to have a midfield that is more than just serviceable. They need to be transitional almost, and he wasn't that.
Bugman.
Yeah.
Oh, what about Nandez? Sorry.
So I was going to include him. He was my other one. But I opted not to include him because I think he was hurt for like three quarters of the season.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Keen.
What about Gasperini?
But was it really his fault per se?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then who won Atlanta?
Musso.
Musso.
Sure. Oh God, okay. Musso was fucking horrendous.
Yeah.
Like. Yeah, no questions asked, Musso.
Okay.
Maybe Hathabor, because he was utter
trash. He was also injured, though, at the beginning of the year.
Was he?
Or it was COVID. He missed a lot at the beginning.
But the games that I watched, he was quite poor.
So you think, think it's more on Musso, the goalkeeper, than it would be on Gasperini? He is more to blame
Honestly,
than the manager.
There were some games, like, for example, against Leipzig. There was one game, wasn't it against Milan, I think it was, it wasn't Milan. It was in the last few games where he absolutely fucked up quite badly.
Okay.
Or it could have, I want to maybe against Fiorentina.
Right. I'm just asking the questions. That's all.
He made a lot of mistakes, like a lot of unforced errors.
Okay. All right. So. Well, good job, Julian.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's it. Did we conclude the 2021-2022 Serie A season?
Yeah. Let's get past it as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
You don't have to.
Chris,
you have all summer to celebrate.
No, you want to know what the best thing is? What? That Roma winning the Conference League immediately pushed. Like Milan,
I agree, and that's your
whatever
right.
They did.
He stole the thunder
into the back burner. No one cares about that anymore.
That's right.
Yeah. So,
I agree.
Keep telling yourself that.
What?
What?
Yeah, what did Milan? I don't know what Milan did this season. Did
I think I would even go as far as to say, Paulo, that Roma's victory this year outshines Milan's victory.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah. It's the greatest competition on earth. First
exactly.
Of
exactly.
And exactly. Would a Milan win? A friggin' Farmers League? Come on. What a joke.
You know what the best part about it is?
We're the farmers?
Are we the farmers? No, well, because a lot of fans were talking about how the Conference League is a small cup and it's not important, et cetera, et cetera. But a club like, or that that Roma is a big club and should care about it. But then a club like Fiorentina was actually celebrating the fact that they qualified for Europe since, since the days of Vincenzo Montella, the first go-round with Montella. So it's interesting looking at the perception from each club and how the fans look at those clubs. For example, Roma compared to Fiorentina.
Well, that's it. I mean, if you're starved for that kind of that level up, right? If you're starved for that, then it's going to appear more appetizing, right? They really haven't had it, so they really wanted that, and they got it, right? They I think they've played, even last year, they started to build that, and this year for sure is where they really earned that that European spot, so good on them.
Okay, I guess we should conclude it now, or else I'm going to get into Rumora talking.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I want one last note from each of you, and then we'll close it off. Who wants to start? Oh, wait. Hold on. Don't we have to, what else is there? There's Finalissima.
Yeah.
So, Paulo, you talk about just preview Finalissima for us, and then what else was there? Anything else?
Well, there is so Monza. Well, this is pretty much a Serie B minute. Monza is the third team to be promoted to Serie A. So we'll have the Derby della Bunga Bunga.
Yay!
I think everyone is happy about that. And then I believe the final for the Serie A or Lega Pro promotion into Serie B is between Padova and Palermo. So that will take place in the coming weeks. And then, so now get into Finalissima. So it's the winners of the Copa America and the winners of the Euro Cup, Italy. So Italy versus Argentina. They play Wembley at Wembley. And supposedly 60,000 Argentinian fans will be there. So it will be a mostly Argentinian fan base that will be watching that game. I guess it's notable for Italy in the sense that it'd be Giorgio Chiellini's final game for the Italian national team. Also, they will be debuting. Italy will be debuting some tablecloth jerseys.
I don't think they're that bad. But
no, they're...
I agree. I'm actually on Team Chris here.
No, they're not good.
Julian doesn't like them.
No, I did not like them at all. I don't like them either. Like, if they wanted to do a jersey that simple, they just could have kept the same color pattern and just kept it like that, like a normal like training. Look, what Milan did for their away jersey or whatever, the white jersey. They could have kept it like that. That's simple. Just but that checkered pattern is fucking ugly. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Okay. Who else? Anyway, Chris, do you have anything?
I would just say, I guess, going forward to next year, I hope for every club, if you know, for the entire league, that there's less drama with VAR.
Yeah, agreed.
I feel like every other week we're discussing some sort of play where we would have liked to have seen something different. So less drama with VAR is my wish for next year.
And typically,
that's
I would say
that's from a Milan fan, but okay.
Here we go.
Typically, I would say that's Paulo's agenda. that was his doing this season, but I think you're right that there was an excess of it for sure this season. Okay, Julian.
I don't know. I think this was a fun season. It came down to the last match day. I just hope we can get something similar next year. Maybe get a few more teams involved.
Yeah, fair enough. So I actually have audio of Monza celebrations here. So let's get a listen to that.
Which means I'd be free to throw some of my sexy parts.
That, of course, was Berlusconi celebrating after his promotion to Serie A.
Berlusconi to Galliani and the Changer Master.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyways, congratulations. So, Paulo, I glossed over perhaps, but or I made you. But who are the three teams coming up?
So Lecce, who won Serie B, Cremonese, and Monza.
There you go. Perfect.
And Cremonese has never been up.
No, I think they haven't been up in the last like 25 years or something like that. Okay. I think it's like the last time they were up was like 98, 99, something like that. But I don't think Monza. I don't think Monza has never been promoted to Serie A.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, and Michael, I think you'll appreciate this. They're the 69th different team to play in Serie A.
Nice. That's why they threw a sexy party. Yeah. I cannot wait for the first Derby della Bunga Bunga.
Yeah, I think we're gonna be on like overdrive for like shit posting.
You have permission to just yeah exactly. Okay, well with that, thank you everybody for listening this whole season. It's been a great season. Make sure you're following us on our socials. So at RTW Calcio on both Instagram and Twitter. Yeah, again, thanks for sticking around. We'll come up with some sort of summer schedule. I'm sure we'll be semi-regular, but again, we'll be around for sure to, you know, chat about the rumors, et cetera, everything that's coming up. But yeah, make sure you stay tuned because we've got, yeah, I mean, how long until the next season here? We're just about to enter June, right? So June, July,
mid-August.
August it already starts. So we're very close.
Supercopa, I think, is actually scheduled to be before the season again. So
Right. There you go.
We should get that first week of August or so.
So I think the new season starts the weekend of Ferragosto. So it's the 14th or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the first time, one of the first times in history that they're doing that, because usually historically they start after Ferragosto.
Right. So that's, would they start the Saturday then? Because that's the 13th.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's that weekend.
13, 14, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
Yeah, no, it is very early.
That's what I'm saying. It's creeping up on us. So it's going to be 2.5 months, literally. So,
well, they have to because they lose the month in.
For the World Cup, right?
For November.
Well, December. Not Italy.
Hey-oh!
And with that, let's take it out. So, again, thank you to everybody for listening, and we will see you next time. All right, ciao, bye.